You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show number 20. It is March already, Friday, March 1st, to be specific. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again. This day ahead of a loaded day of stakes at Gulfstream Park. We're going to be talking about just about all of them over the course of the next hour. Joining me to do so, first up, we have the usual co-host on this program. Gave him the day off the other day. With Tommy Massis on the line, there just wasn't room for this guy. He is back on the planet Texas. I don't know where in the planet Texas. From the background noise I was hearing when we were sound checking, I assume there's a story there. I'm talking, of course, about the most electrifying man in handicapping, the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, my man?
PTF, what's the word? Yeah, I'm over here at a a coffee shop here in New Braunfels. And, you know, on my Fridays, when I take Austin to school, I just hang out down here instead of driving the hour back and forth. But I guess everybody wants to be on the radio because everyone's back here in the room I'm at now. But it's all right. That adds to the excitement. Let's see if they – who do you like in the fifth? Oh, you don't know. Okay, well, they're no help.
This is we've had some weird ones. The show that I did sitting shotgun in Sean Borman's car driving to Cincinnati comes to mind, but this might be one of our biggest challenges broadcasting wise yet. But JK, we'll bring you in when we need to bring you in. The good news is the burden of talking to me for an hour is shared this week, and it's shared by a man I'm very excited to have on, going to become a regular on here. And we talk about him all the time. I don't know if he's ever formally appeared on this show. He's done some seminars with me. He's been on the Steve Bick Show. I'm talking about a guy with a background in thoroughbred ownership. In fact, he runs the Black Type Thoroughbreds partnership. Hang on, let me fix that. He runs the Black Type Thoroughbreds partnership. He's been an owner for a while. He's got great stories to tell and a fine handicapper in his own right. Jake Ballas, welcome to the show.
Morning, Pete. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And where are you? You sound like, unlike the other guy on this show, you figured out how to get to a place where there wasn't 17 things going on to record.
It's pretty easy just to sit in your car and pull over on the side of the road, Jonathan, if you haven't noticed. Yeah, I'm in Ocala. I just left the training center down here, watching some babies train, and I'm on my way to Gulfstream for the Fountain of Youth and the races Sunday, and back to Ocala for the sales that starts next week.
Since you brought it up, this spot on Sunday, the horse on Sunday, looks pretty interesting. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, we paid a decent amount of money for him as a yearling. It's taken us a little while to get him to the races. He had some bone bruising as a two-year-old. We got him back to George Weaver back in November. And he's going to debut a mile on the 16th on the turf. We're really excited about him. We think he has a bright future. And, you know, with a little bit of racing luck, especially on the turf, I think he's going to run big Sunday. It's only an 8-horse field, which is a little bit surprising with these, you know, maiden specials on the turf. Usually you get a bigger field than that. And, you know, Chad Brown has one in there and obviously should take money, and that will probably be the horse to beat. And so we're hoping to get him going and have a good year with him.
You talk about George Weaver. I know you have a long-standing relationship with him that's also turned into a friendship. What goes into choosing a trainer, and what brought you into George's barn?
That's a good question. There's a lot of variables, and especially when you have partners. A lot of people have different opinions, and you know, I think you need to choose a trainer that you feel is right for that horse. If that makes sense, you know, a lot of trainers, it's a program. They all go through the same program and kind of this strong survive type deals. So and with George, I know I've been around his barn. He's an unbelievable caretaker. He treats every horse as an individual. If there's an issue, he will back off in time before it becomes a bigger issue where you know, other trainers may just try to press on, and some horses get over it, some horses don't, and you have to go to the farm for, you know, for a setback. George is very easy to communicate with, which if you're in partnerships, people want communication. That's the number one complaint with my partners and others that I've spoken to. And with this day and age, with all the, you know, videos of the works and all the public on the computer with, you know, PPs and, you know, XBTV now, there's a lot more info out there. Where back in the day, you didn't have that. You just relied on the trainer telling you whenever you talk to them. So communication is the number one, in my opinion, issue with, you know, owners and trainers. And so with George, I have that communication. As you said, we are friends. But I think he does a really, really good job. He's always hovering around 20%. He's never, you know, he's had a lot of success without having the real big time, you know, expensive sale horses. And, you know, if you have a horse that's very, very precocious, that you think is going to be limited in distance, you know, you may want to choose to go to, that's just as an example, Wesley Ward, who wins all the 2-year-old races, right?
Sure.
So if you have that kind of horse that you know on the farm, maybe you choose I'm not saying George can't do that, but the question was, how do you select trainers? So if you have a horse that is that precocious, you may go to somebody different, you know, versus if you have a big 2-turn horse that you know is going to be a very late developer, you're not going to send that to a Wesley type trainer. So I don't really believe in throwing every horse to the same trainer. I know a lot of people do. I would prefer to spread them out, not to overextend ourselves, but, you know, just, you know, have 2 or 3 different trainers, I think, is that's what's worked for us. And I think that's important.
I'm going to bring JK back in here in a second to ask a question, but it's just such a natural segue to talk about your relationship with Hall of Famer Bill Mott. How did you first meet him, and what's your relationship like with Bill?
I met Bill through Angel Cordero. We had a horse that got hurt. He was very talented. His name was Cigar Street.
Sure.
He broke his maiden second time out with 99 buyer. And he was an unsound horse. So he ran his first 3 races and he got put on the shelf. And Cordero said, this horse is very, very talented. I think you need to move him. Let's go to New York with him. He was down in Kentucky in Fairgrounds. So I've never met Mott, and I kind of told Angel, I said, well, why would he take one horse, you know? But the dam was a half to Cigar. And, you know, he couldn't breed. So there were no Cigar babies. So Angel said, I think Mott would love it, not only because the horse is talented, but because it was the same family as Cigar. And so you've heard everything. I mean, you read about Bill Mott, and at first you're kind of intimidated. You know, first time you meet him, you're meeting this Hall of Famer. And I was at Payson Park, and probably one of the nicest, classiest guys I've ever been around. And so we sent the horse there, and we had a lot of luck with him. Won his first 3 with Mott there. We got to the Breeders' Cup Classic. Unfortunately, he ended up getting injured. But I have a very good relationship with Bill. The main thing is you don't need to bother him. Don't call him 5 times in a week.
Did you learn this the hard way, Jake?
No, Angel advised me what to do and what not to do, and I just I went along with that. And the one thing about a lot of trainers, when you don't hear anything, no news is good news. So if I never heard from Bill, it was fine. when the horses are doing well, the problem is when they're not running well, and you kind of want to know why, but there's no reason why other than you bought a slow horse and you sent it to them, right?
Right.
Is usually the answer. So I learned, you know, when, and that way, you know, when you do call, he would answer, text back. You know, so just don't bug them. I mean, they have 100 horses, you know, and if every owner was calling them 5 times a week, he wouldn't be able to train.
Makes sense.
So Angel introduced me to Bill. We had a lot of luck with him, introduced me with George. And this is the first, you know, big horse we've sent George, coming up on Sunday. So those are our 2 main trainers that going forward, him and Rudolph Brissett, Mott's old assistant, will have some once we grow. So those would be our three main guys.
Jake, you mentioned something that I think is probably important to your whole picture in this game, which is kind of this free consulting that you get from a Hall of Famer, and that Hall of Famer is Angel Cordero. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your relationship with Angel and, like, kind of where that came from? Because, you know, when people see you guys walking around together, you got this elderly Hall of Famer that's under 5 foot and this 6'8" guy who's in his 30s. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. And I think people would be interested to hear, because obviously when you're going to be on the show, Angel's name will come up more often than not.
You know, Angel rode for my father back in the 80s. My dad had a really good horse named Groovy.
Sure.
That Angel rode. And you know, he got out of the business. I graduated college in 2003. The graduation present was to go to Saratoga for a week by myself. I didn't know anyone there. And the only thing my father told me was, go find Cordero. Well, you were still having flip phones. You're not Googling on your phone. And in all fairness, I didn't even know what he looked like. And I'll never forget, I was at City Tavern on Caroline Street, sitting at the bar on a Monday night. I didn't even know what dark day was. So I'm talking to the bartender, asking, hey, is there going to be anywhere to go out tonight? And he said, well, around 10 o'clock, the jockeys have a party in this upstairs. So I opened the door, and this place is packed. A lot of little people, and then there's myself. And I, first person I see, I just walked up to, and I could tell he was a jockey or a former jockey. I didn't know. And I said, excuse me, do y'all know if Angel Cordero is here? And he said, well, if you don't kick my ass, I'm Angel. So I introduced myself, and the next night he took me to dinner, and then the next year he took me to the Derby. And fast forward to 2008, Angel calls me and says, you and your family want to get back in the business? And I said, yeah, well, you know, we're talking about it. And he said, well, I have a horse for you to buy that just ran third. So we bought a horse, and his name was Joining the Dance, and he ended up making the Kentucky Derby in 2009, which was great, but it also made me think that this game was easy. The first horse you buy gets to run in the Derby.
Yeah, you're doing that walkover in your first year of the business. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, we brought 42 people. It is the best time, best day I've ever had. We ran seventh. We acted like we won the race. So Angel's been a mentor, and you know, some people can say, oh, he's just a jockey, he's this. He's ridden the best of the best. He's seen the best horses. So he helps me purchase horses. I really rely on him just because he knows what a good horse looks like. And there's a lot of bloodstock agents and other people that think they, you know, jockeys should be jockeys. And, you know, I feel it's a huge advantage, and it's a big asset to have someone of his caliber that will look at horses and explain little things to you. And, you know, so we're very, very close. And when I go to Florida, I stay with him. We go on family vacations. And he's been a really help in our business, mainly helping prevent making mistakes. I've made plenty, and majority of those were without Angel, in all fairness.
You're not the first person to make that observation to me about how good he is around horseflesh. I know I've talked to John Panagot about how much he's learned just from being around Angel and being around horses, and the level of detail and the things that he sees that even people who've been around the track a long time don't see, because obviously you're dealing with somebody who's not only experienced but just incredibly talented, having ridden, as you said, the best of the best. I can't leave Joining the Dance without asking about the name. I don't know if I've even told you this, but of course, that line comes from a song by Dan Fogelberg that my father used to play on the radio every year around the Kentucky Derby time. How did the name come about?
Well, so since we bought the horse that after he'd already run, we didn't get to name him. So he was already named. We bought the horse off of Carrie Brogdon, and she named him, obviously, after that song. I didn't know what the name meant. I went back and, you know, I Googled it. I listened to the song, and every year to this day, I will play that song leading up to the Derby.
That's great. My dad would love that story. That's very, very cool. Yeah, I thought you might be a little young to be a Fogelberg fan, if I'm being honest.
I've never heard of Dan Fogelberg until that song, and I can't name another.
Big fellow, this is what Pete does to me all the time. He gives me all these artists with real names. I only know the rappers with the fake names. He gives these real people with real names. I don't ever know what to tell him.
JK, what is going on there? Is your order ready? What's the beeping about?
The Pick Three boys have phoned in and they're trying to ruin the show. They're grinding coffee. They're stocking the shelves. I was back here for 45 minutes by myself. There's been seven people back here since then. They know the big fellas on the show. They're just trying to ruin everything.
Let's talk about how your business has emerged, Jake. And at some point you went from owning horses privately to putting together partnerships. And now the latest evolution in that, a public partnership in Black Type Thoroughbreds. How has that progression been made?
As you said, we were doing everything ourselves, and we would partner with others, and it would just run under our name and, you know, our friend's name and whoever else was, you know, involved with the horse. And, you know, partnerships are the new way of owning horses, in my opinion. It's only going to keep getting bigger and bigger. So I needed to figure out a way to raise more money. We can try to go get more horses that way. It lessens the risk for everybody involved. So this past year, I've toyed around with it and finally decided to go full fledged with doing a partnership. So like this horse is under that partnership, and we ran a couple others that were under the partnership, but it was just us. So this will be the first full year that we do have outside partners, and like this, and we still have other partners that in the horse that run under their name. So you'll see this ownership group is not just Black Type Thoroughbreds, but it is, and some couple others. But I do think partnerships is the best way to, especially if you've never owned a horse. It's not as expensive. You're not taking the full risk. You get all the benefits of quote owning the horse yourself. And I've learned that if you own 5% or if you own 100% of a horse, the feeling and the excitement is the exact same. You know, when you win a race, you're not cheering less because you own 5% of a horse. And you know, I've been around you guys at Saratoga when we've won a race, and y'all had no interest in it financially, but y'all acted like y'all won as well. And so it's just exciting. And if you can get a good group of people together and fun partners, it's kind of like your own way of owning a sports franchise. Majority of us are never going to be able to own a sports franchise, but this is like that because you're buying these athletes, you get to help manage their career, you pick to where they're going, help select races with the trainer. And there's a lot to go into it. And like with our, you know, with our partners, I do get people's input. You know, it's not just to here, give me your check. We're going here, we're going there. I'm not listening to you. I want people involved. I want them going to the races. And another benefit is you get all these people together at the races or at dinners, and they meet other people and figure out what they do in life as their main career. And it's opened the doors for other investments outside of horse racing for myself and for other partners, which is an advantage no one really talks about.
Yeah, I've never heard that before, but as soon as you said it, it resonated, but I'd never even thought about that or heard anybody make that point before.
I think it's a great way to network. And, you know, the sport, it's such a good sport that doesn't get enough publicity, and you need more people involved. And so this is a way to get more people involved. And, you know, I'm sure every partnership, that is their main goal, is to bring new people. And, you know, you're going to get, if you bring in 20 or 30 people, some of those are going to catch the bug and want to do it themselves, which is what we want to happen.
Let me ask you about your friend, Rashard Lewis. Is he involved in the Black Type partnership? Is he still pursuing ownership stuff on his own? What's the latest from him?
He's involved with Black Type. He'll still do stuff, you know, or on his own, or he'll take, you know, whatever percentage he wants. But he is involved in Black Type. You know, with Chimere Nelson's involved in Black Type. So we have a couple, they're both retired now, of old athletes involved. And Rashard loves racing, and he follows it. He texts me, and every horse works, he sends me a text. And he handicaps. He loves the races. He loves going. And so he's involved, and he'll be around majority of the races when he's not doing his big three stuff in the summertime, which has prevented his Saratoga outings the last 2 years. The first year they played in the championship, the second year he ruptured his Achilles, so he couldn't come. But he loves Saratoga. It's his favorite place, outside of, traveling with the family. But just to go somewhere with his buddies, he absolutely loves it. He's still involved, and hopefully he'll be involved for a long time.
Give us the backstory on Rashard and his involvement in racing. Did he get into it through you? Is it something you guys got into together?
He got in through me when it was with Joining the Dance. It was 2008, and he was in Orlando. And it took him a while to commit to doing it, to buying a piece of the horse. And once he did, he fell in love with it. He can really relate to horses as athletes, knowing they need time off when they get injured, icing, all different types of therapies that they do on them, and they're doing the same treatments with the horses. So when he bought into Joining the Dance, they were making their in 2009 is when they went to the NBA Finals with the Magic. And I remember John Thompson did a big special on them with TNT, and they were talking about the playoffs. And, then the segment goes into, you have a horse in the Kentucky Derby. Rashard's eyes lit up. And Rashard said when he was playing the Knicks, he'll never forget, he said Allen Houston was, I don't remember if he was playing, but he said Rashard was at the scorer's table. He may have been announcing. And Allen Houston, before Rashard was checking back in the game, made a comment about the horse running in the Derby. So he would be in the locker room watching the races with his teammate. So that way, it was really cool to get him involved. And he had a piece of White Rose, who was very good. So Cigar Street, he has not taken a piece in everything. Whenever we purchase something, I give him an option. Hey, do you want to take a piece of this one? Or take 1% to 99%, it doesn't matter. And so he just kind of makes his decision on his own, or he'll call Angel and talk to him and see what Angel's thoughts are. One thing he doesn't like for some reason, and a lot of people like this, he's not a big fan of owning a turf horse.
Interesting.
Even though we had White Rose, he would rather a dirt horse, mainly because the turf horse is the best horse doesn't always win. It's all about trip. XYZ with turf and getting cover and blah blah blah, and dirt horse, especially if you're a speed horse, you can go to the front and make your own trip. And that's what Rashard is. But he loves it, and like I said, hopefully he's going to be around the game for a long time. He's a very good ambassador for the sport as well.
Definitely. And his opinion on dirt versus turf sounds a lot like Jonathan Kinchin. In truth, JK, you have one for Jake before we get into talking about some of these races.
You've had some really good horses with being involved in really good horses, not only ones that you've owned, but even ones that you've purchased. Race Day, what comes to mind is one that you've purchased, Isotherm. Tell us a little bit about the difference between ones that you own and ones that you've purchased. I know that you get just as much satisfaction as seeing those young kids of yours graduate and do well for the owners that you've been involved with.
True. I feel like they're mine. It goes back to the partnership standpoint of if you own 5%, you feel like you own 100. I don't own any percentage of those horses, and I feel like they're mine because, I did buy them. Race Day, he had run four times maybe. He was with Kellen Gorder, and he went through a public auction, and Windstar owned him. And most people said, you can't go buy that horse. Why is Windstar getting rid of him? You can't buy off those guys. And so I just, he ran an 8, I believe, on the sheets when we bought him. And I bought him 4 o'clock, sent him to Todd, and he became a very good older horse, sold him to Spendthrift for a good amount of money. Same with Isotherm. He was a very good horse. His unfortunate Keeneland came up soft, and so they chose to run him on the dirt because George worked him on the soft turf, and he hated it. And so they chose to go to the dirt in the Breeders' Cup. That was a shame because he was coming off of a win at Belmont. We have a nice Lemon Drop Kid New York bred I bought last year in Miami. We paid $125,000. I bought him for a client in New York. He won second out, ran an 8.5, I believe. We sold a percentage for a lot of money, came back, won an allowance. He had a little hiccup. He's back training now. I do get a lot of satisfaction out of it. Obviously, you can look at yourself and say, why didn't I buy it for our group? The truth is, you can't just go buy every horse you like. You don't have the financial means to. It's very satisfying, and I'm very happy for the clients that, we've done well with. And hopefully we'll have more luck. This year at the sales, they're coming up. So hopefully we can get a couple more for our group and have the same luck we did last year.
And we had a question someone asked, what's the best way to get involved in ownership and so on and so forth. And so I'll say this on Jake's behalf so that he's not saying it. One of the things that I'll say is that, when I first got involved in this game, I had a big score and I started looking into getting a piece of a horse. And every time I looked into it, the math always came back really weird. I just never could wrap my brain around it. And so when people ask Pete and myself, what would you do? There's two groups that I would go with if I was going to buy a horse tomorrow or if I have bought a horse in the past. It would be Black Type Thoroughbreds and Jake. And then also I've had great experiences with Marshall and Clay at 10 Strike. And the reason that I find those two groups to be so much better than other options that are out there is because I know the principles involved and know that they're stand up guys. Unfortunately in this game, funny business happens. And if you're getting involved in a situation where you are not familiar with the principles, you can be a victim of the funny business. And I can assure you that these two groups of people are not going to pull any funny business. And I think that's the biggest fear when you're getting involved with these four-legged animals. And there's so many different levels to it, from sales to bills, to vets, to trainers, to spotting the horses, to selling the horses, to dropping the horses, to claiming the horses. There's so many levels, and honesty is at a premium, I think. And that's one of the things that I gravitated towards those two groups because I know that I'm going to get on the right side of things with them.
And the big difference between the two, 10 Strike being a private partnership, not really out there for public investment, but Black Type Thoroughbreds is set up as a business where you can give Jake a call and look at the website and see what's coming up in the inventory. How does it work, Jake? People who are interested, what are the steps to get involved and where can they find more information?
They would just need to call me and I can go over everything on the phone. We have the legal documents for the LLC. And, what usually is going to happen is I'm going to buy the horse and then there'll be X number of shares available. And once the shares are gone, then, that one's closed. In the future, you would like to probably package horses together, four or five, and then everyone has a piece of that many, because it is very, very difficult to go buy one horse and say, all right, this one's going to be really good. So if you buy four or five, you obviously hope they're all good, but reality is they're not all going to be good. So you give yourself a better chance. But yeah, they can give me a call, shoot me an email, and I'll get right back to them. I'll talk to and explain all the positives. I'll explain the negatives, and the risk. And the main thing that people always ask that you meet, what's your ROI? Well, it's almost impossible. You can't do that in horses because the injury factors, all kind of stuff, right? Like your projected earnings. Well, you don't know. So the main thing I would stress to people is, don't give me a check expecting to go make a lot of money. That's not what we're in it for. Now, can you? Absolutely. I mean, we made big scores with Race Day, big score with Le General. We've made, very good scores. But you can't give a check, in my opinion, thinking, okay, we're going to make this amount of percentage on our money. And if somebody tells you that, they're lying. And so that would be the main you know, the main thing I want to stress to whoever I speak to. And then I'll send the legal documents over and, you know, we'll go, you know, go from there.
BlackTypeTB.com. That's the place to find the contact info. Is that right, Jake?
That is correct.
Excellent. Check it out. BlackTypeTB.com. More information there. You'll be hearing a lot more from Jake starting right now as we dive into these stakes races at Gulfstream on the weekend. You guys looked at all nine of these. Are we going to do it? We'll try to speed round through.
I have looked.
This card at Gulfstream reminds me of the card at Santa Anita yesterday that I'm very upset that I didn't play. Apparently, every favorite won. I would have made $1 million if I was playing at Santa Anita yesterday.
At least you admit it. At least you admit it. As our guest, Jake, we're going to start with you. And the first race we're going to look at is the Palm Beach on the turf. A Thread of Blue installed as the morning line favorite at even money. But I wonder if we can't maybe see something here at a little bit bigger of a price. What did you come up with?
You know, A Thread of Blue, his three wins have all come on the lead. And the three losses, he hasn't been on the lead. So if he goes to the front, you know, obviously he's got a very, very good chance to win. King Okatar, the Mark Cassie horse, you know, it's first against winners. I don't really trust that horse at 6-1. And, you know, the horse that I may try to beat him with is Mott's horse, Casa Creed. And he runs very good, and then he runs very bad. So his last three races were bad, good, bad. So I'm thinking that him and Johnny are teaming up. And that's the only horse, in my opinion, I think that can beat Kieran. But I would have to use those two horses, which would be Kieran and Mott. And I'm probably going to be like JK today. There's going to be a lot of favorites.
The old in and outer angle for Casa Creed, the 7 for Jake. JK, how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Jake said. You know, the one horse I thought was interesting was King Otakar. Well, what is that, Pete? I'm sure it's some literature thing that you can tell me exactly who King Otakar was.
I don't know the reference. I'll Google it while you give your spiel here, though.
Okay. So here's one of the things. You know, we talked about this. We kind of previewed it in our last show. Like, I've started kind of playing around with Stats Racelands. I think there's some interesting things you can do. I think there's some silly stuff, but I think there's some real interesting things that you can do as well. And one of those things is I set this angle up where I wanted to see what it says about a horse that wired a field in their previous start with Julian Leperoux. Julian's not usually on the front end. He doesn't find his way there very often. I feel like when he gets there, it's because the horse has the talent and the forward speed to get him there. When I looked up his stat, when he's leading at the first, second, and stretch call positions, and Julian was the rider last time, they come back and win at 31% with a 42% ROI. Now, look. It's not an auto bet where you run to the window and you bet all your money because of the stat, but I think it tells you a little bit about the improvement you can expect from King Otakar, you know, running in his second race after breaking his maiden. He could, you know, he's going to be forward. If he's sitting outside of Kieran's horse or on the lead and Kieran's outside of him, there's some improvement there that could happen. So at 6-1, I'll take a chance with him using him, but I think you obviously have to use A Thread of Blue based on the things that Jake pointed out. But I'm gonna try to get cute with this Cassie horse a little bit.
Good call by you on the literary reference, in this case to a comic novel series. I've heard of it before. I want to call it, as an English speaker, The Adventures of Tintin, but it's probably Tintin because it's French. Anyway, I've heard of these comic books, these like literary comic books. King Otakar, apparently a character from there. We'll probably have to pick it up, given that there are nine races today. We're going at do four race speed, and we have all these extras. Just as an FYI to you guys, we can keep it short and sweet, but no need to rush. If there's something we want to pause on, we absolutely have the right to do it. Let's talk about the Canadian. We're staying on the turf, another grade three. JK, we'll keep it with you.
I thought it was only two horses. I think, you know, the 6 Hembury or the 7 Breaking the Rules. People like to come in when I'm talking. It's interesting with the beep in the back. I think Breaking the Rules is going to probably be overbet. It's Chug, it's IRAD. I'm going to go with the other one. I think that in a multi-race bet, if you're trying to get alive here, you probably want to use both of them, or at least hammer one of them. But I think Hembry is the one that I'm going to use in this spot. I thought he ran well last time in Gulfstream. Big figure, was bet that time. I'm a big fan of Mike Maker. I think he'll run well.
I'm just too deep in breaking the rules camp to go against, though you are not wrong to think about that the market might go a little bit nuts there, but I've got to just cast my little vote for breaking the rules. How about you, Jake?
I like breaking the rules. Showed talent early on the dirt. And it's 2 for 3 on the turf. He's very logical. You know, cowboy culture was interesting to me. There's not many people that had a lot of success claiming off of Brad Cox. This horse is interesting. He came from the clouds last race, only got beat a length and a half. And I'm going to use cowboy culture. Now, Hembry was in that same race, came from out of it as well. I'm going to use those two to try to beat breaking the rules.
All right, let's move on to race 4, the Gulfstream Park Sprint Championship. I've got a literary reference for you here, JK. We're gonna go back, way back in time to Cervantes with Quixote, who I can only assume is a Don Quixote reference, right, JK?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. I thought Don Quixote was that cartoon character that rode around with the Don Coyote that rode around. What cartoon was that?
You're sending me to the Google machine again.
Don Coyote, I think, was his name, and he was like a little goofy guy. He was like the sidekick of somebody else.
Yeah, look, it was. Well, he was. It was a reference. It was a Hanna-Barbera series that was basically an animated version of the Cervantes sort of birth of the novel in the 16th century or so. But yes, you are correct.
I am a literary. I didn't even go to NYU. I'll go quick here. I mean, look, I could try to give you something creative that will lead you down the wrong path. I don't see how they beat Recruiting Ready, especially down from the inside. He's going to have to be 4. The horses that he's been facing are just better. This is not the greatest running of the Gulfstream Park sprint, but I think Recruiting Ready will be extremely tough. The only other horse I could give you is the second choice in Don Coyote. So I don't know what to tell you.
Not the greatest, huh? This is probably the worst grade 3 sprint I've seen in a long time. I mean, Recruiting Ready should absolutely destroy this field. The surprising thing is there's no, you know, real top trainers that are in the race. There's no Chad, there's no Todd, there's no Kieran. That's the surprising point. I think Recruiting Ready is a single, and that's the only way I can go with that.
All right. With that, we'll go back to the turf in the very one, which goes as race 7. Jake, any thoughts here? Can we get off the chalk parade potentially?
I think Mark Hennig's horse is going to run well. He's eligible for A other than if I'm right. And he's been running big races. It's the factor, the Semper Septennial, or however you pronounce that. I do like that horse. And then Tricky Escape, I'm kind of intrigued by. DiCarlo is riding again, which I like. I think he's a very good rider. He's very underrated. Those are the two I landed on. And this would be second off of a layoff for John Service. Not that big of a layoff. I like Tricky Escape.
Tricky Escape on top with a little bit of consideration for Semper Sententiae, if my Latin serves me correctly.
How much money is Tricky Escape going to take? Because people think that's Jason Service. No, I'm serious. I mean, how many people at, you know, how many, you know, kind of weekend warriors are going to open up the form and see Service and think, oh, that's a guy that's winning at like a 50% clip. And they turns out to be his brother who won a Kentucky Derby, but whatever.
It's pretty funny.
You know, I kind of kept looking at Lafta. I thought the last race was good enough. It wasn't great, but good enough, and apparently is working well. We'll check out the workout report. Now the DRF workout report should give us some hints there. The horse worked last time on the turf. I love seeing turf workers who are going to run on the turf, Mojestic being one of them. Obviously, when the workout report comes out for Mojestic, his last work was on the grass. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the Clockers think about how he did last time he was on the grass. So Lafta, I think, is interesting, but Holy Helena is the standout here. Had a dull effort last time, but obviously was going a little bit longer than they'll be going today. So those are the two for me. Holy Helena is probably the one you'd lean on.
I did have a host fail before when we were talking about Jake's runner on Sunday. I don't think I ever got around to mentioning the name Mojestic. So take a look at that race in the PPs. And let's move on with that to the Here Comes the Bride. JK, where are you going here?
So this isn't like a grade one at Keeneland where Chad has three in and he's going to run 1, 2, 3. I mean, maybe he is. It's kind of tricky. It's like he's got three in for like three of his – I don't know if OXO's is one of his biggest owners. I'm assuming maybe they'll become one. But he's got Klarovich and he's got Dub and Matiquette with those three outside runners. You know, I thought Cherie's horse that got Joel is just interesting. Just kind of a newcomer, 15-1, coming from overseas. Has been working on the turf at Payson, so you're not going to get any workout buzz on the horse. I just think there's kind of an opportunity there. And then I also thought Bella Laura for Norm Cassie was interesting. The horse ran well in the against Concrete Rose at Keeneland as a two-year-old, and then ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly turf where no one was going to win that day other than Newspaper of Records. So I think she's a little bit interesting, adding blinkers, two alternatives to the most likely scenario of Chad winning with the 6, 7, or the 8. But I'm going to try to get cute with one of those two and hope that that Chad entering three is from a lack of confidence of any of them rather than I don't have anywhere else to run them. But it could be the latter for sure.
It's funny looking and seeing a trainer have three horses and the top three choices on the morning line at that. The two that JK mentioned, 2 Bell Laura and 3. I don't know if he ever said the name Primella. I'm going to go with. And feet to the fire, you have to pick one for a contest or something. JK, which do you prefer?
If you made me single one in a pick four, I would single Bella Laura. If I was picking one in a $2 win place contest, I would pick Primella. And there's a whole lot of reasoning behind that we probably don't have time to get into.
Not on this show, but at another time. It should be intuitive, but we can come back to that. Jake, are you also going to do the very dangerous move of fading Chad Brown completely in this spot?
Absolutely not. the Norm Cassie horse, it ran well in the Jessamine. It wasn't a fast speed figure. It was 50-1. Comes back in the Breeders' Cup. It was no factor there. 50-1 again, off a layoff. I don't see that horse. I mean, I get where Jonathan's going with it a little bit. I don't think that that horse will beat any one of Chad's. The Medaglidoro, the $1.25 million horse. I like that Cambria Park. If I had to choose one of Chad's horses, I'm going to go with the European horse for Dub and that group. If I'm betting this race, I'm boxing all three of Chad's horses, and I know that it's not crazy, and I'm just playing those three favorites because it's very hard to differentiate those three horses, in my opinion.
Preference for Golconda, the 6. We have to pause here and have an argument, since you're not only is your strategy the exact opposite of JK's, but that idea of boxing three favorites, I think JK might or might not have something to say about. So back to you.
Well, I think Jake understands I don't think Jake would really box those three horses. I think he was just saying, you know, if he was forced to play the race, that's how he would have to play it, by thinking that one of those three is going to run, or two of those three is going to run 1, 2 or whatever. It's not that it's a complete fade. It's an opportunity, I think, that if you feel like you need to play in a pool that's connecting this race, I don't know. I think the pick six starts in – yeah, see, this is like a middle pick four. So if you love something around this and you wanted to kind of hook this race up, I think there's an opportunity to try to beat the Chads, who are going to take a ton of money, especially in multi-race bets. If you can get one of those three out of winning – there's a real opportunity to make money. It's not a complete fade. It's not a none of those three can win. It's a here's an opportunity to make some money if those three don't win, and they're all three going to likely be overbet.
Fair.
Quick question, JK. What is on my gal Betty? If you take away the Breeders' Cup, where newspaper record, obviously no one was going to come close, and there's something happened there. It was on yielding, so she had already won on yielding. What do you see in the two that you like better than the Bella Laura? What do you like better than my gal Betty?
Not a ton. Not a ton. I see what you're coming from there. I think with Bella Laura, the addition of the blinkers is kind of encouraging. The fact that she finished behind what I consider a good horse in Concrete Rose. I thought Concrete Rose was the second most likely winner. I think Concrete Rose is the only horse that could have beat Newspaper of Record that day, and she didn't. It was more that, obviously the last two works have been on the turf. See how those come across. My gal Betty's been working on the turf too, but we're not going to see a report on that. So nothing, not a ton separating them. I just felt like there was more of an excuse for Bell Laura to kind of continue to improve versus my gal Betty.
All right. JK mentioned the pick six. It starts with the ninth race. We're not going to do the maidens on this show. Race 11 is the Honey Fox. I can't remember who officially did last because we did another round of questions after. I'm throwing it back to JK. Who's it going to be here?
I'm going ice cold here. I got off the Chad train for a second. Ice cold single with Precious. I thought that filly, she was bet in her North American debut against Uni. I don't think Uni needs an introduction. We know how talented she is. Grade one winning filly for Chad. And I just think that another interesting thing about Precious is that Peter Brandt owns the horse, and this filly, where most Peter Brandt horses are at Payson, because I think he's involved with Payson, this one's at Palm Meadows, where Chad's main string is at. I think she's going to be extremely tough. There's no way she's 7-2. She's gonna have a number. She'll have a number and a slash and a number, but it ain't going to be 7-2. It's going to be 6-5, 8-5, 9-5, something along those lines. She should be pretty short here. I think she'll be extremely tough to beat. And I'm in a single in the late pick four.
I just love any time Uni comes up on the show, JK, because that's the filly, of course, who put that wonderful mustache on your face the other fall at Keeneland. And I only wish you'd had the proper afro and that mustache at the same time. I think that look really would have been something.
Uni, not only is she the filly that put the mustache on my face, she's one of the only horses in the history of the world that have ever put a win in your column of head-to-head competition.
Totally fair. Totally accurate and fair. Jake, what do you think about the Honey Fox?
I agree with Jonathan. I think Chad is going to win that race. And, Castellano rode Todd's horse last race, won the grade three. He goes back to ride for Chad. I think Jonathan's right. I would single Chad there. I would use Conquest Hard Candy underneath. Interesting story with that horse. A friend of mine, Bo Bromagen, and I, we pinhooked that. We bought that horse in August at Saratoga for $100,000 and wheeled it back into October sale and sold for $150,000 in October. So I've always followed the horse, and I'm happy the horse has done well. Seems he runs big. He's always kind of right there. So I'm going to use that horse. Maybe I'm a little biased, but I'm going to use that horse to pick up the pieces.
Let's move on, gentlemen, to the Devona Dale. This will probably be a quick conversation, I'm guessing. Return to the races of Jaywalk. Will you have a penny bet against her, Jake?
No. She's much better than the group she's facing. I don't think there's anyone close, fast enough to run close to her. So I can't go anywhere other than Jaywalk.
JK?
If you want to bet this filly in a Kentucky Oaks future, you have between now and what time? 5:01 p.m. Eastern. Because she's going to gallop, and her price is going to get cut in half. So if you're looking for value, just like before the Saints played the Rams, if you're looking for value, go ahead and hop on it now because she's going to cut in half.
Nice callback to the old Sports Form podcast there. Our man Scott Gramling is smiling. Good work there, JK. I wonder if there's a little bit of an opportunity in the pick bets. You've got Jaywalk here, universal single. I wonder in the race before where you both mentioned potentially singling Precious with that 7-2 morning line, a 10-horse field. If you can get into that race, if you can get alive on the back end of a pick something to a horse like Precious and or horses like Precious and Jaywalk, do you think there might be a little bit of extra value because you think the morning line is a little high there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely try to finish into it, right? Because like what you're insinuating is that the pool is dark. If you play a pick three that ends in Precious, no one's going to see the money she's going to take. But if for whatever reason the pick three doesn't fit you don't like anything in the first two legs, the other thing you can do, it's not as efficient, the computers will still see it, but the public won't, is you can play the pick five where Precious is the second leg, and you won't, the world won't see the fact that she's 6-5 or 7-5 or whatever she ends up being. That's another kind of way you could try to work around it. But don't do that if you don't have an opinion in the first leg of the pick five.
All right, we're going to go out of order in the last two so we can save the most time for the Fountain of Youth. I did say we were going to do a quick chat on the MACD, and let's do that quickly, grade two, to close out the card with lots of familiar names, including Channel Maker. Jonathan, we'll start with you.
So I only used two in this race and two in the Holy, not the Holy Bull, excuse me, two in the Fountain of Youth. I think if you put me, you, Jake, Matt Bernier, we can find some other people. We can put DJ Unstable. We can all put us in a horse suit. Let Mike Maker train us going long on the grass, and we'll probably be able to get the job done. Zulu Alpha was impressive last time. I don't really see any reason why any of those horses in that race are going to turn the tables on Zulu Alpha. I think that horse is the most likely winner of that race. I guess if you had a problem with that and you were trying to get cute, I'm going to use Channel Maker as well. I'm going to try to hit $100 pick four. I'm going to single, two by two, and see if I can't turn it into something special. I think these races are straightforward. Channel Maker's got back class, had an excuse last time being on the soft grass when he faced Bricks and Mortar when it was pouring rain on City of Light Day. And so I just feels like one of those two are going to get the job done here. And if someone else wins this race, like I often say, I couldn't find the horse anyways in an efficient manner. So I'm going to go with the two that I think are going to win and see what happens.
Makes sense to me as far as that goes. We had a question, JK, actually, about your frequent comment that you and me in a horse suit could be trained by Mike Maker to get a mile and a half on the grass. What would the name of that horse be? You can think about that one. We'll answer it on the next show. You got it? Okay.
I got it. No, yeah, I got it. Where's the oxygen?
Jake, your thoughts on how we're going to close out these picks at Gulfstream on Saturday before we loop back to the Fountain of Youth?
Those were the two I landed on, Maker going home. And it's interesting is Castellano's not riding Channel Maker back. They put Rosario on. And Castellano is on the Tard horse, I believe.
Yep.
Like Kevin Attard at 15-1. He didn't ride. He's never ridden that horse. I guess I need to go back and watch that last race by the Channel Maker. Do y'all recall if it was a bad ride? Or I don't know. Bill Mott doesn't take horses off. I mean, take jocks off. He'll let him ride again. It's interesting that Javier's not on that horse. And so the only other horse that I would like to see run big would be Hunter O'Reilly. And the only reason is because of our time in Saratoga one day with your Australian friend.
Hurricane Anthony. I've told that story before. The sore winner story.
When he won at 16-1 was, I mean, I've never seen someone celebrate and with so much excitement and just be so annoying at the same time, but I loved it. So if my horse wins, I'm going to be thinking about him in Australia doing something crazy.
He's a New Yorker now. He'll be around. He might even be at Gulfstream. He was out at the NHC. Were you, though, Jake, among the people his wife made him go around to and apologize the next day for his behavior? Did you get an apology?
I wasn't there. I did not show up the next day. I did hear about it, and his wife was 1,000% correct. There were kids around. There was F-bombs being thrown up. I mean, kids everywhere. I understand his bet and everything, but maybe he had one or two too many drinks, but it was an unbelievable route. And remember, Chris was there and didn't need Hunter O'Reilly. And this guy was yelling behind pipes. Just the look on Chris's face, and I think he disappeared for about 45 minutes after. He needed Sadler's joy.
The best part about that story is if you don't – we've had the Piper on the show before. Pipes is a good rooter. But he can be a little bit moody when he gets beat, and he does not appreciate someone gloating in his failure. He doesn't enjoy that very much.
I would go further than that with Pipes. Pipes, anybody would have been annoyed with the ridiculous. These guys doing somersaults during the race and yelling F bombs. It was the Hurricane Anthony route was the worst I've ever seen. But even if you're just a rando in our spot cheering for another horse when Pipes is there, like, that'll annoy him. I've seen him after the race, like, oh man, who is that guy cheering for the 7, when all that guy was doing was, you know, going like, come on, Javi, you know, something completely benign that anybody is entitled to do. Anyway, very funny stuff. There's some rumors swirling about the Piper that we'll share on a future show, possible broadcasting opportunities, that if they should happen, the racing podcast world will be a richer place for it. Let's just put it that way. All right, guys, we can go. Let's do 5 minutes on the Fountain of Youth. It's a really, really interesting race. Let's start the discussion not where most people will, but we're going to take advantage of the fact that we've got a friend of George Weaver's on the show, and we're going to ask if you've heard anything about how Vekoma is doing.
Yeah, I absolutely love that horse. Watched him train. He is really, really fast. And, you know, from before he ever ran, I knew George liked him. George doesn't tip off horses very. I mean, the first time I asked him, I said, do you like this horse? Yes, I like them. That's all I got. But I have had the privilege to watch him train. And distance is going to be the question mark. He's out of a grade one winning mare that won going 7, I believe. Now, really good horses will outrun their pedigrees. And especially at Gulfstream, speed favoring track, this horse is going to be close to the lead, if not on it. He's going to be sitting right off with Manny. I do know George really likes the horse. I'm saying that what Hidden Scroll did in his debut was something I don't think we've seen. Very rarely have we seen. Went 22-44 on the backside. Ears were pricked and then opened up and won by 14. I know it was in the slop, but the way he did it and his last work was unbelievable. So I'm sure when the news came out about Maximus Mississippi being injured, I'm sure George was kind of hoping that was there would have been just a small little setback with Hidden Scroll, so he wouldn't make this spot. But I do think Vekoma's going to run a very, very good race. It's a tough, you know, coming off a layoff like this, going a mile and a 16th, ideally you probably want to draw it up like that, but there's nowhere to really go other than this spot. And he felt he would rather stay here than go ship to New York. He'd rather run out of his backyard. The horse is extremely, extremely fast, and I'm really looking forward to that race Saturday.
Tales from the Track. This is a fun – I don't think I've ever told this one before. If Robert Chow's listening, he'll remember this. I went to my first Derby in 2009. My second Derby was 2010. Yeah. 2010 was also my Belmont Pick Four that was Champagne Doro.
We remember.
Got you. But listen, so 5 weeks before that, I was at Derby. It was one of my second. I wasn't heavily involved at the time. I busted out all my money, and there was a horse running named Mona DeMama. And most people, you two know, my mom's name is Mona DeMama. It was May 1st, 2010 at Churchill. And I went to the ATM, took out my last like $140, bet a bunch of tries with Mona DeMama on top, hunch playing it out. And I got beat. Mona DeMama is the dam of Vekoma. So Vekoma essentially owes me money.
Only a horse player could conjure that type of logic, by the way.
Right, yeah, he owes me money. He owes, I, you know, I... his mom owed me money, so now he owes me money because she's not running any for him to get it from him.
Oh, my goodness. Jake, did you have anything else to add handicapping-wise before we go to JK for his opinion, or is it all about Vekoma for you?
You know, I think Shook's horse, that Code of Honor, he's not going to run that horse in this spot if he didn't really like him. You know, he's under no pressure to run him with the connections. And, you know, if you just throw out that last race, he's obviously been impressive. I think it's a two-horse race between Hidden Scroll and Vekoma. I know they're high on Global Campaign, but ultimately I think that if Belmont's horse runs back to that race that he ran in his debut on the slop, no one's beating him.
Right.
I don't see it. And he did it so easy, and I know it's first against winners. He did it in the slop. You hear all that. So I guess if there's a time that he's vulnerable, it would be this race. I just, you know, I'm rooting for Vekoma. I'm biased for Vekoma. I think it's a two-horse race, in my opinion. And those are the only two I'll land on.
You made some good points about Code of Honor. I did a write-up for At the Races. The work tab since the last I thought was really interesting. Just the fact that he's had six works, three of them at 5 furlongs. Just I haven't seen the works or even heard reports about them, but progressively faster times. The great point you made about no pressure from connections to be running. For me, in the UK, this is a real possibility because he's priced up at 10 to 1. 12 to 1. So you're in situations there where you can lock in not just the win price, but also the place price, which is essentially the equivalent of our show. The idea that the horse could run in the top three and you could still get, you know, 5 to 2 or whatever. That's the bet for me very clearly here for as long as that lasts. I do wonder on the tote if he'll get a little wise guy-y and down into like an unappealing 6 to 1, but I wouldn't just rule him out yet. I feel like the hate may have gone too far.
You know, if you go back to that work on February 5th, I mean, if you go 48 at Payson, that's similar to going 47 anywhere else. That's a very deep track. So, I mean, a good point on how fast those works have been. And Shug's not a trainer that's going to have bullet after bullet after bullet. So, and I do think that horse is going to get played. And what do you think, Jonathan? Do you think that Code of Honor will be – I mean, what's the difference between him and Vekoma on the tote, do you think?
You know, Code of Honor is gonna have to – his price is going to drift, I think, based on the last performance. Because there wasn't, like, a real excuse. I mean, I guess, oh, it's off a break. And the reason we didn't all bet him last time is we thought, you know, Shug's not going to crank him for this one. I hate the draw for him because it really only gives him one choice, right? It's like he either has to go and be forward, and there's a lot of other horses – they're going to try to do the same, or he's got to take back and eat a bunch of dirt. Neither scenario do I love, especially going against two talented horses in Vekoma. And then, like you mentioned, Hidden Scroll, Craig Burnick tweeted yesterday that he loved Hidden Scroll and that a bunch of people were telling him why he was wrong. I agree with him. I mean, I like Vekoma, and Vekoma is one of the other horses I'm going to use. I'm only going to use two, but I think Hidden Scroll's last performance was magical. And I get it that he was in a sloppy racetrack. I get it that it was a forwardly placed horses were rewarded that day. However, Belmont horses don't break from the rail, open up by 6, and then win by 14 against Chad's, Todd's on big race days. I don't care if he was running on broken glass. Like the horse is a very talented animal. He showed that January 26th, and I think he'll show it again. I just think he's a freak. I don't think the slot matters. I think there is something to not getting overly excited about horses breaking their maiden on the slot, but that's when they're running 85 figures and they're facing horses that have been running 78s. This horse ran a triple-digit buyer first out for Belmont, and and his triple-digit buyer is like 10 points faster than anything anyone else has ever run. I think he's a freak, and I think he'll show us that on Saturday.
If you believe in speed figures at all, he's on your tickets. Will he be too short to do anything in the USA wind pool? Yes, and he's very short in the UK. I saw him priced up in two books. In one place, his Hidden Scroll was 5 to 4, and another odds on already. Pretty crazy. Interesting. And yeah, I did see all the people. I don't know if Craig was trolling or just throwing that out there to see what kind of reaction he got. But let me tell you, the people saying that stuff, none of them are going to be in a hurry to book bets on him, I don't think. And if they are interested in booking bets on him at anything near 5-2, DM me.
I can think of one person who's going to bet $5 to win on Everfast that has a long list of DRF formulator reasons why Hidden Scroll won't win. And it kind of makes me sick to my stomach.
I don't even know if I understand that reference, but I love getting the obscurity out there. A closing thought from each of you to round out this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. JK, we'll start with you.
Saturday's full of fun races. I can tell you right now, me and Austin will be glued to the TV. I think about 3:58, race 9 on Sunday, to watch Jake's big horse, Majestic. And I'm very excited to watch him run and rooting like hell for Jake and for George Weaver.
Jake, a final thought from you?
Obviously, I'm more excited about Sunday than I am Saturday. One quick thought. There is a race today I'm interested in watching, and it's Mucho's return. And he's running against a horse named Lutzky that a friend of mine, Dermot Magner, is training. I know he's very high on Lutzky. I think, remember Saratoga and Mucho won, everyone thought he was the next coming.
Yeah.
Mucho will be 1-9. Lutzky's a New York bred. I've seen the horse train. Trains like a very, very good horse. I'm not saying he can beat Mucho, but if something went wrong, I think, that horse has a good shot today. Tomorrow's a great day of racing. And again, I just hope on Sunday we get lucky and I can come back on the podcast and celebrate via podcast with you guys if we can get lucky enough to win Sunday. He should run well.
Godspeed, Jake. Really appreciate that. My closing thought, very simple. JK, this experiment of you doing the show from this coffee house, we won't be repeating that, will we?
I could have just gotten the car. Jeez, I cannot tell you how quiet it is right now.
What There's was there like a high school band coming through the door? It was like ding dong every 12 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess people leaving, coming. I think they're like stalking. So like people keep coming in and out of the front door. Like, I don't know. It's bizarre.
It's okay.
Blame it on the New Braunfels Public Library for renting out their study room today.
You should just have a standing reservation in that place. Anyway, that is all from us. I want to thank Jonathan Kinch, and I want to thank Jake Ballas of Black Type Thoroughbreds. For more information on Black Type, go to blacktypetb.com. I want to thank our friends at 10 Strike Racing and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation as well. Special shout out to business manager Drew Coatney for the In the Money media empire. He's been working overtime lately. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners. Been really enjoying your hashtag AskITM questions. Keep them coming, and we will be back next week with a couple of more shows. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your photos.
Where most Peter Brandt horses are at Payson, because I think he's involved with Payson. This one was at Prairie Meadows. They're not Prairie Meadows.
Very different. We can cut that out.
Yeah. What? I'm going blank on the name of it. What's it?
Palm Meadows.
Palm Meadows. Okay.